tradition inside the podcast here at the Wash Up Walk-Ons. Every Black Friday week, every week that we play Nebraska, we bring on everybody's favorite Cornhusker, and that is Jeremiah Searles. He is a fan favorite of this show. This is the, I don't know, sixth or seventh time he's been on. He's fantastic every time, and he did not disappoint today. Excited for you to listen to this. Let's have a day. Let's go. Back for another Wash Up Walk-Ons podcast with everybody's favorite Husker, Jeremiah Searles. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Hello, friends. So good to be back. It's been too long. So good to be back.
Yeah, well, and we're, for the beginning of this, we're missing two people from the show. We've gained one. Did we have Jeremiah on in the off season this season?
Yeah, we talked before. I'm not sure if you remember me, but
I remember you. Yeah, you kind of zoomed in quickly. You like came in like, hi, and then you left, and then you came back again. But yeah, it looks like you've graduated. You've grown up on us.
Slowly, over time.
He's made it. To, he's made
can't
it
grow a beard, but grown up on us.
Oh, no. It'll be 10, 15 years before we see face hair on Gary, maybe.
I think around then.
It'll be 35. Two undefeated Iowa, Nebraska teams facing off by the time,
by the time that happens. I think that's another universe.
Possibly. Quite possible.
Especially in the
quarterback.
Well, especially in the new Big Ten.
Oh, yeah. This was the easiest year. This was the easiest schedule the Huskers are going to have for ever and always, and they still haven't found a way to become bowl eligible.
Well, we're going to talk about that.
We'll get there.
As I said, we're missing two. I believe one will show back up. Kevin said that 8 was better for him. Searles wanted 7. We compromised at 7:30. I figured Kevin would crawl his ass in here eventually. Drake, as you guys, the listeners know, will say has voluntarily opted out of the podcast for now. Kevin Ward.
What does that mean?
Good question.
I need more context. Kevin, can you explain to me what voluntarily opting out of a podcast means? Hi, Kevin. Good to see you, buddy. Been a while.
What's going on, my dude? To voluntarily opt out of a podcast is a nice way of saying quit, right?
Quits forever. Voluntary opt out means you can always opt back in, but quit's a strong word.
I think it's closer to opt out than quit. I wouldn't use the Q word quite yet.
What are you sipping on there, by the way?
Liquid Deaths.
Oh.
Dude, look, okay. The lime Liquid Deaths. Fire. I'm trying to get them to support. I'm trying to get them to we're in conversations for them to be sponsors of our podcast, so that would be awesome.
Let's go.
We're rolling. Dude, I think last time we talked, it's our
we're
podcast
talking about O-line O-line Academy.
O-line committee. Yeah, the O-line committee. Yeah, so we launched that thing and we are going to circle back to Drake. I will not forget about that. But we launched that thing back in I think it was like March. We launched that thing. As of right now, we're up to over 13,000 subscribers on YouTube, climbing the ladders on that front, you know, getting fun stuff, breaking down film every week. And for whatever reason, some people like to listen to me and Alex Boone and two idiots just talking in a mic about football. So it works out.
I actually wanted to ask you about that. I mean, congrats on the subscriber growth. That's awesome.
Yeah. Congrats.
How are you guys managing to get the film to break down? Are you just taking the TV cut or what?
No, so we all have NFL Plus accounts, right? So you have NFL Plus accounts. You can get the coaches, all 22, from the NFL Plus. And then so we'll break that, download it to the computer, we'll kind of decide, hey, what do we want to talk about this week? Find the hot button topics, right? Like, for example, this week's episode, we're going to talk about Detroit's comeback, how the Niners got themselves back on track. And then I think we might do one more about the Raiders. We had the Raiders last week. You know, we want to talk about Houston, obviously, because CJ Stroud's just amazing, right? So we just kind of find the hot topic buttons there, and then we do an hour-long podcast of just us talking stupid stuff and stuff like that. I love it, dude. It's been a dream of mine to always have a podcast. I'm always on a bunch of them, but like to actually have your own and do your own is actually pretty fun.
Pretty fun, right? Do you know if any colleges or any conferences have that that you can get the all 22 look?
If you
You have to ask Michigan, I think, actually.
Yeah, Michigan, Connor Stallions.
I hear Connor Stallions is available these days.
We actually, as an agency, we have sources that we ping that we get it, but it costs quite a bit of money. And it's one of those things where it's like, you don't have to tell people where you get it from. And so it's like, gotcha. I will not, but it's so hard to get, dude. College Tape is the most lock and key for whatever reason. It is just so difficult to get. But for whatever reason, guys like Duke Mannyweather, Brandon Thorne, who like do the Joe Moore Award, they always get all access to it. Jeff Swartz, the guys that are like the commentators on like Big Ten Network, Pac-12 Network, they get access to it. I would love for them to have something that's similar to the NFL Plus accounts that you can pay a subscription fee and download the All-22s and look at it, because that's how you tell the true story.
It's right? Free money. So many people would subscribe.
Oh my gosh. I mean, and you guys know as players, like you can't hide on the tape. There's nothing, like if someone wants to know what went wrong, let's pull up the 22 end zone copy. I can tell you exactly what went wrong, right? Like that idiot didn't block that idiot, which caused to be a bad play.
Yeah, it's not like they're able to hide anything from any other schools anyway. It's not like, hey, you're playing Nebraska this week and Nebraska says, hey, give us your game film from when you played Penn State earlier this year.
Right.
Iowa doesn't just say, no, we don't want you to watch that film.
Yeah, they all trade film anyways. I don't know what's so wrong about giving it to the public. Yeah.
That's why I don't understand it, Kev, is because the opposing teams get the film from other teams. So it's not like it's, you know, you're getting the film. Second, Searles, do you think that's a big reason for the disconnect between a lot of fans who think they know what went wrong or what went right in a play? Is because much of the time they're watching either the TV copy or you're sitting on the sideline and you're not seeing it from the end zone, which tells a 10 times better story.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's why, like, I like listening to the Manning cast on Monday Night Football, right? Cause they're actually talking about like the operation of the play, the checks and all of that. And if you could watch an all 22, if you can watch a game from the end zone, it's like you're watching a completely different game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like when you watch the end zone cut, you're like, man, I didn't see any of that happen. Mm-hmm. Right. Cause you see like the holes open up or how they close or how the double team missed or how the receiver didn't cross into the second window. He settled in the first, or you can really see the quarterback stripe of, hey, is he looking down that receiver or is he trying to look off the safety and come back to his read? Like it just gives so many more answers than not. But I also think that the commentating this year in college football has been atrocious, right? Like, it's been so bad. Like, they're saying things. Like, I was watching the Notre Dame-Wake Forest game the other day, and Joe Alt, one of the best tackles in the college football, hopefully signed with us, you know, he's chops this dude down, drops on the ground, buries him, and they throw a holding penalty, and the announcers are like, oh, Joe Alt really gets a hold of a guy there. He can't do that one. That just looks terrible. It's like, what are you looking at? Like, what are you talking about? Right, like, that stuff drives me nuts.
A lot of the stuff from the All-22, I feel like it reveals a lot of the why things didn't happen often, which is really illuminating. Why didn't a guy turn here? Why didn't a guy split this gap? Why didn't a guy hit this hole?
Right.
And that would answer a lot of the questions. I don't know. It's interesting. Kev, I talked to Jeremiah the last time we had him on in the summer or spring or wherever. And I was like, dude, we would love to have the college all 22 because Kev, we have an untapped segment of the show that would basically just turn into the short version of what they do with the O-Line Academy, and people would absolutely people would absolutely just our subscriber count would triple if we made that a Patreon segment. Like,
I mean, you're 100% correct. I mean, our film breakdowns, like our 15-minute film breakdowns, usually are within 10,000 to 15,000 views. Our normal podcast gets like 4 or 5. Right? It's the film. It's what the people want. Like, the people want the film because they want to feel smart and they want to go to the water cooler at work on Monday and be like, well, you know, if they would have ran that GT counterplay and that guard kicks that dude out instead of logs him, and then that puller gets around and seals that backer, man, that dude's out the gate.
He's out.
They don't know what they're talking about. They heard someone else talk about it on a podcast. But that's all people want to be able to do.
Yeah.
Right. Right. That's all it comes down to.
Well, speaking of lead blocking through a hole, we don't have our guy who does that. Drake, to wrap that conversation.
Yes, please.
So I don't know if you heard, but Brian is not going to be returning for our offense next year.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. We didn't average. Well, it was.
Hey, we still put up 122 points this game this weekend. All right. Yeah.
Easy.
Maybe you have thoughts on a contract stipulation like that, just in general. But that was what it was. I don't even believe that that's why the decision was made. But Drake didn't take lightly to that. Drake, Brian was the RB coach for a couple years. And Drake was in that position room for a couple years. And, well, he was there the whole time, but with Brian for a couple years. And Brian is his guy. You know, and maybe to more people's surprise on the outside than not, if you watch the film from this weekend, them beating Illinois, the clock hits zero, a lot of guys, Brian is their guy. Very, very well liked within the program. I know that's a shock to a lot of people out there who have personally attacked him and came after his character and all these things. The guys love him, Drake being one of those. And so Drake, he had some words for some people that weren't kind. It was full Drake fashion.
Yeah.
And he decided to himself, Kevin and I did not have to step in on this one. He decided himself to just be like, you know what? Talking about Iowa football, especially all this Brian drama each week, it's not serving me in a positive way. And so he for now has stepped away. Now, tonight is a big thing because in the text message where I said, hey, I'm going to get Searles for tonight, he sees that. And I have speculated that when we get into the offseason, we get a little bit further away from the bullshit. We get some cool guests on. We get T-Daddy Wirfs on again. We get a couple of our boys that we played with. I think it's going to be hard for him to be like, I'm not jumping in on that. We'll see.
I honestly thought there'd be a chance that we'd get a surprise appearance tonight.
He may hop in.
I'm slightly hurt.
You should be.
I'm slightly hurt.
You should be.
I know. Yes. I'm texting him right now.
Now, what is important is you're here. And not only are you here, but you brought a goddamn bald eagle with you.
It's my dad's office. I'm in my parents' basement. I'm back in Colorado for Thanksgiving, and so I'm in my dad's basement. He's got one of those standing desks.
Yeah.
So trying to better myself in the old Clue fashion, yes. Drinking some water, bettering myself.
Fuck yeah.
You know, we're actually doing me and my boys back home at the gym. We're gonna try the who just did it? Someone did the 86-hour water fast.
Oh, that was Dana White.
Dana White. We're actually going to try and do that, and I have a feeling I'm going to fail in miserable fashion, but we're going to give it the old college try.
That's 4 days.
Three and a half days.
Three and a half. You get water only for the first 24 hours with some electrolytes, and then you can drink bone broth on days 2 and 3.
So you're just mainlining bone broth? Like I'd be...
You can drink it twice a day. You can drink it twice a day. So I don't know. We're going to see. So, my wife's already told me that if I'm a cranky, crabby person, she's going to force me to shove food down my throat. So what's
the theory like behind doing that? And you have to have no activity level like for days 2 and 3, right? Because you're running.
I'm actually going to be traveling on days 1 and 2.
You're going to be fucking
miserable. I'm going to be in New York. So I'm going to see the Giants play this weekend. To watch J. Mike play, our center from Minnesota, who drafted in the second place for the Giants. So I'm going to go out there, and then we're meeting with the front office on Monday. So I'm going to be a fasted 24 hours meeting with the GM, Joe Sheen of the Giants, just trying not to be a miserable person.
Okay, so
like, you're like plus 250 to throw a punch in that meeting and get kicked off of your airplane on the way home.
Yeah, let's not do that. Get fired, lose my clients, wife leaves me. Yeah, let's not do that.
So I've done 3 days. And I didn't do any bone broth. I was just drinking like electrolyte water throughout the entirety of it. I was doing like some pretty solid, like one 24 hour fast, like every week or 2 weeks. This is right when I got out of college, like was trying to lose all the weight. So I was pretty used to fasting. First day wasn't bad for me. Day two got a little bit like physically tough. Like, damn, I'm hungry. Day three, the hunger goes away, but don't try to do physical activity. Mm-hmm. I did a 20-minute YouTube yoga session with my wife in our living room at the very end. I'm talking like hour 67 or 68 of the 72-hour fast. I almost passed out in the living room, almost fainted. I had no energy.
Mm.
But good on you. Good luck.
It's more, dude, it's more along the lines of like, I just want to feel pain again.
Yeah, sure.
Right? Like, I kind of miss that part of like
Kevin's face.
No, Kevin's. Sure. But like, there's like, you know, like the challenge. Sure, like, yeah. can I do it?
Is there another like, way to get that though? Physically, than 86 hour
I'm
fast?
Sure there is. You know, I'm sure there is.
You can also do an eating competition. Like, can I eat this whole turkey?
Oh, I've done that. I destroyed my neighbor. I destroyed my neighbor in a chicken nugget eating contest. Oh, it wasn't even close.
Yeah. McDonald's? How many nuggets?
McDonald's, 76 in 45 minutes.
Now, what's the strategy there? Do you have sauce? Do you sauce? No sauce?
All sauce. Just rotate the sauces.
Rotate the sauce.
But I'll tell you this, where I really messed up is I let them get cold.
Yeah.
Then it was like eating rubber pellets. Oh. But again, I couldn't let this neighbor of mine who told me for whatever reason he thought that he could beat me. So I just stayed 20 ahead of him the entire time.
Jesus Christ.
Like, and then at like 75, I think I was like, I'm thirsty, and cracked a beer. And that's when he was like, yeah, this is over. Like, this is done. But to say I will never do it again, I didn't shit for 3 days. It was awful.
Wow.
It was awful. It stopped me up so bad. It was not.
I don't know how some of those guys are professional eaters. Wild.
Oh, makes me sick.
Well, how many nuggets do you think Chestnut's taking down?
Oh, God. I mean, 200.
200 easy.
Yeah, do you know how many 200 nuggets?
Do you know how many 76 hot dogs?
76 hot dogs that are
and buns.
The size of a nugget. That's a lot of hot dogs.
Yeah. You ever seen Chestnut drink a gallon of milk?
Yeah.
45 seconds.
That's just insane. I'm sure it's just grisly. Just we can't show that video. It's inappropriate.
All right. Well, somehow we're on this topic. This is a football podcast. It's an Iowa Nebraska podcast, and you guys just got that conversation for the first 18 minutes. We love it. We love it. Nebraska Cornhuskers, year one under the one and only Matt Rhule.
Matt Rhule,
what are your thoughts on his performance so far?
I'm all in on Matt. Now, you know, I'm all in on Matt Rhule, and there's a couple of reasons for that. One, I got to go to a few practices in the spring, and you could instantly tell the way that he coached
that
he was former player.
Oh yeah.
Former player.
Sorry.
I did have to get it cleared.
Searles is riding the line between so many different industries.
So many. I just float, right? Renaissance man. But like instantly from day one, like you could tell that there was a level of discipline that he was going to instill in this team that has lacked for years, like on years under the Frost. And so the ability to see him be able to do that and then to flip it on Tony White, the defensive coordinator, has been fantastic.
Yeah, defense had a solid year.
Yes, he's been phenomenal. I mean, to the point of where he's getting coaching firms that are reaching out for his possible head coaching candidate. You know, so, but Rhule has brought a different level to this team that I haven't seen in probably the last 5-6 years of like a belief in the culture, right? And you talk about what Iowa's had forever in the culture and how it's been built and understanding like what we are, right? Buy-in. There's a level of buy-in to this team that I haven't seen in a while. I mean, even to the point where they get blown out by Michigan and Coach Rhule has them on Sunday night in a 3-hour full padded scrimmage. And then they go out and they beat Illinois on a Thursday night. Like those are the type of things that like, if you're a coach and you put your nuts out on the line there like that, like you better be able to deliver on the back end.
That's if you have a 3-hour practice post getting your ass kicked with a game in 4 days, things better work out. Otherwise you're going to have a bunch of seniors that are fucking pissed.
Exactly.
I bet he had seniors that were fucking pissed anyway.
Oh, for sure. You know, but as you all know, winning cures everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, there's been some questionable clock management things with him. But overall, you know, that's kind of been his MO with even coming from the NFL. But overall, I think we hired him to be a recruiter, a leader of young men, and to rebuild a program that he's had history of rebuilding from Temple, history from rebuilding at Baylor. You know, all those things. And so far, he's checked a lot of those boxes.
And it's, it now sounds like the situation in Carolina with ownership, like it's not a, it, like, obviously things didn't go well for him there, but it sounds like there's like other issues besides just being the coach there.
Yeah. And I've said it and I'll always say it, coaching in the NFL, coaching in college, apples and oranges, man. Mm-hmm. Like it is completely different worlds as far as trying to deal with college kids and NIL and class schedules and all that stuff to grown men and families. Like you try and pull that full padded practice, 3 hour stuff in the NFL. Good luck.
It's a big reason why KF has stayed in college for so long.
Right.
He always understood that from the beginning. He would talk about it all the time. He didn't want any part of that. Like he loves KF is a college young kid build into a man kind of guy. I'm sure he'd be great with adults too, who have families and are out there living their own lives. But it's like he was made to work with 18 to 22 in the COVID era, 24-year-old kids, and just like build a collective group of them. So yeah, it's Rule has a pretty good track record going.
Yeah, no, and Nebraska is behind him. You know, I think the offense is what it is as far as we've been decimated with injuries, but
do you think fan expectations have finally come down to a reasonable level? Like instead of expecting Frost to be Big Ten champs within 3 years and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he has. And I think Rule's done a really nice job of managing those.
I agree.
Right. Like I think Rule came in and didn't promise the moon and the stars, right? He came in and goes, they hired me because I rebuild programs. Obviously, we're here to rebuild, right? But the thing I also loved about him is, you know, he didn't come in and shop all his players, right? He didn't take the Deion approach, right? And Deion and Shadur and all those clowns over there were like, oh, it's personal, right? But like, really, he was like, I got brought in here to coach the players that promised and were committed to play at Nebraska, so that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, he brought in some pieces, but he's really trying to build his culture with the players that have been here, bled for this team, know what this team's about. And I respected that a lot out of him. And I do know that he demands a lot out of his players. He demands a lot out of his staff. And that's what you have to do in order to rebuild a program. You kind of have to start from the ground up and start with the leash really tight. And then as you get better and as things start to become more established, you give people more leash, more boundaries. You know, I think he's have a proven track record. So until he proves to me that he can, I'm all in on Matt Rule.
Yeah, I think he's off to a really solid start. I'm trying to think of who else is doing well as a first year head coach. Obviously, Jeff Brohm in Louisville is doing a really good job. I'm trying to think
Lance Leipold's year two, but year one went pretty well last year.
Yep, sure.
Fickle's struggling.
Fickle's not having as good a year as they probably were hoping that he'd have. But
versus expectation, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm guessing Matt Rule like is the absolute best guy they could have gotten for the job, and it's like extremely lucky in Nebraska that he got fired. You know.
Yeah. No, it kind of fell into our lap. You know, everyone kind of wanted Fickle. But if you really look back at what Fickle's track record is, he's always kind of inherited pretty good teams. Right? Like Ohio State was really talented. Wisconsin has a lot of talent on it. Like Matt Rule built his track record on being a coach from scorched earth and starting it from ground up.
Right. Like Temple was nothing. He got him to like a 10-win team.
Yeah, and then he takes Baylor from a 1-win team. Baylor was
going through absolute Armageddon with what was going on with their program at the time, and again I think he got him to top 10 team in the country.
Big 12 championship appearance, I mean New Year's Six Bowl, all those things. So you know, I don't think it'll be that easy here. I do think it's going to take a lot of years here, especially with the Big 10 getting better and better. You know, but if we can find a way to squeak out a win against you guys on Friday here and go to a bowl game, I mean that's the first bowl game Nebraska have been to since 2017. You know, so that's really the benchmark for what needs to happen in the next steps, right? Find a way to win five. Well, now we got to find a way to win six. And if we don't win against you guys on Friday, we're all going to look back to the opener against Minnesota and go, what the hell? How did we let that one slip away? Like, I walked away from that game.
Tough. That was a tough one.
Started with Jeff Sims debacle.
Hey, we both lost to Minnesota this year.
Yeah, you guys probably shouldn't have.
What do you think about that call?
I think letter of the law is what it is. I think that I don't love the fact that it's reviewable. Mm-hmm. I think whatever's called on the field should be called. Right? I think that's a very subjective call, almost kind of like a pass interference, right? Like they tried that in the NFL, like we'll review these, but I think in the moment you either saw it or you didn't. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the imperfect game that is football. And that's part of the imperfect game that is refs.
There's not one person on the field, in the stands, referee, either sideline that saw it on the field in real time.
Yeah. And so, yeah, if you want to slow-mo it down and super analyze it by letter of the law, yeah, it was probably a fair catch. But I think that's one of those subject calls that I just don't love that sometimes those calls can go be reviewable.
I think I'm sure it'll get brought up to the rules committee this offseason.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure KF will have a few words for the rules committee there.
He's going to break out his notepad. All right, I got a couple points here. All right,
first off,
all right, these fucking invalid fair catch rules are fucking bullshit. Okay.
I think it's such a good point. The one I come back to is like. The best way for me to explain why I think that's a bad call is because if you were to slow-mo, like go to the all 22 and slow-mo the line of scrimmage on every play, there is a defensive hands to the face or a holding or something going on that is illegal in terms of the written rule book every single play. But we don't go back and review those because it's just – if you don't see it, if it doesn't happen, ref doesn't call it, then it didn't happen. And that's what hurt, I think, as Iowa fans the most, is the fucking guy in the booth 3 or 4 minutes after the fact went and created a call.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck, that hurt.
And it was, I think it'd also be another thing if Fleck or someone on the sideline was like, he called fair catch, right? Nope. Like he did it. Like, but even, I mean, the only damning thing to you guys, and this is the one damning thing as I went back and watched the tape, is you clearly see your gunner turn and run away, right? Which means some type of call was made, whether it be Peter.
Yeah.
Right. You all know the Peter call.
You can yell whatever you want.
No, you can't. No, you can.
Yes, you can.
If you yell Peter, and you give any type of hand motion.
It's just the hand motion. It's not, you can say whatever the fuck you want.
But
I don't know if it's in the NFL. In college, you can say whatever the fuck you want.
No, in college, yeah, this is America. The only thing that matters is above.
First Amendment, sir.
Yeah, all right. You got that hawk behind you, all right? We can say whatever we want here. The eagle, sorry.
Easy peanut gallery.
Hey, by the way, speaking of a lineman penalty from this last weekend, did you get a chance to see RO lineman peel back and absolutely flatten that guy?
Yeah.
Now. Loved it. Yeah, I was going to say.
Can't do it, but
right,
love it.
Right. Now that's a penalty. But did that like warm your heart?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it makes me so sad now when you see the perfect kill shot lining up and you're like, oh, yes. And then the guy like throws his hands up and like turns like in front of him. You're like, gosh, dude, those used to be so fun to watch the guy like stand over, give a little flex, like pound the chest.
I remember like one of the most nastiest hits I've ever seen. It was like the Wisconsin-Nebraska Big Ten title game.
Oh, I was in that game.
You played in that game?
Who was it that just got absolutely deleted?
Kenny Bell destroyed a DB. I can remember running after the play behind him, and he just murdered him and being like, oh my God, Kenny killed a guy. Like, that dude's dead. Right? And then like
I just witnessed a murder. Dude,
Brett Bielema was walking across the field just mother effing Kenny, kick him out. That's the dirtiest thing I've ever seen. And that dude's sitting there like,
oh, Grant pulled it up here.
Oh yes, dude, it is a murder session.
I'd love to see this from the all 22. God damn it.
When you could do this, right? This wasn't illegal yet.
They ended up calling this. They ended up calling this personal foul. Now there's your boy 71 there.
Oh, okay.
And you're dead.
That was the only bright spot of that entire game, by the way.
That score there is tough. As you can see, you just started the second half.
Boys, they hung 70 on us.
That's not good.
That was like a 6-6 Wisconsin team too, right?
We had beat them earlier in the year. I think they were 7-5. We had beat them earlier in the year, but that was when Ohio State was still postseason banned and Penn State. They were actually third in the leaders or legends, whichever stupid divisions that was. They were actually third in that conference, and they came in and mollywopped us.
Can we get a reasoning, a little breakdown on how you beat them initially and then got absolutely ran out of the building?
You know, it was one of those things where we were pretty hyped to play them in 2012, because in 2011, they embarrassed us for our first ever Big Ten championship or Big Ten game ever in Madison. Right. Like I can remember Carl Pliny being like, this Russell Wilson guy, he's not that good. It's going to be fine. And he went out there and I still have the echoing in my brain of Russell Wilson, Moneyball, right? Like over and over. And so we were pretty pumped to play them, and they had a DN that had talked shit about Taylor. Right. So kind of like bulletin board material, all that. It was a night game in Nebraska, which is always electric.
2011. And so, was JJ still there?
No, he had just left. Thank God. Thank you kidding me? God. I didn't want to play him. So we were juiced up and we beat them. And then they found something in our defense where we couldn't stop a fly sweep. Like it was Melvin Gordon's coming out party. Like all they did was kept running a fly sweep with Melvin Gordon. And he had like 400 yards rushing in that game. Right. And then eventually we figured out like, okay, we'll stop the fly sweep. And then they just handed it to Monty Ball running straight up the field.
Wisconsin had a stable back in the early
2000s. They still do.
2010s.
I mean, Braylon Allen.
Not like that though. Dude,
not like that though. Man.
They had White, Monty Ball, and Melvin Gordon at one time all in that backfield.
They had like a really thick dude too back then. He was a 1,000-yard rusher. I forget his name, but it was like Monty Ball and him were like the 1-2, and then they had White. Yeah, and then Melvin Gordon.
I mean, they went Melvin Gordon to Jonathan Taylor, right? And then Jonathan Taylor.
There was one guy in between there, but I forget his name.
He was good too.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had a stable.
Going back to Matt Rhule, I think from a outsider's perspective, every once in a while, we'll get the. I just saw one today. They're asking, you know, it's media availability. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I saw. In fact, Rhule might be making a case, Searles, for Iowa fans' favorite Husker, because he's so complimentary of Kirk and Brian. I think it's real too. I think it's real from him, and he's been that way of every coach this year, and I've seen a lot of stuff from his media availability that feels genuine and not coach bullshit that you get from a lot of guys, not just Frost, but from a lot of guys. And he's been very realistic about expectations, about what is necessary, about what they need to do, and that's refreshing. Like from a opponent, from a rival fan base, from a Hawkeye fan's perspective here, I'm over here sitting here and I'm like, yeah, I like to hear that. Like, it sounds like KF.
He definitely says all the right things. And to Clue's point is like, yeah, I can respect this guy. It's like, Scott Frost was such an easy guy to hate from an outside fan base. It was so freaking easy. But I think Matt Rhule says a lot of the right things. And to Clue's point, I do believe like he comes across as authentic.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it is because he understands that winning is hard enough. Like, there comes a point of like, why make it even harder on ourselves by trashing another team or anything like that. But I also think he has a lot of respect for coaches. I do think he generally respects how hard it is to wear HBC head ball coach on that lid, man. That's a hard thing to do. Right. He had a quote the other day. He's like, head coaching is like being in the mafia. Eventually you're going to get whacked. Right. Like, he's like that. He just knows. And so when he sees programs, especially one like Iowa, and like, listen, you know, we're rivals for everything, but I have a lot of respect for teams that hold on to coaches and let the coaches build what they need to build. And you guys are the poster child for that. And I think Rule sees that. And I think Rule sees the teams that have had great success with that.
Well, he's also got to sell the Nebraska fan base and donors on that. So he has some time to build up his program.
They signed him to a 9-year deal. That's 9 years. Really? Right? And yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Hey, man, they fired Frost last year, 2 weeks before they had to pay him like $5 million less dollars. So it sounds like
$13 million. Yeah. But some donor, from what I heard, some donor showed up with a check and said, do it now.
Like, I wish I had that kind of money. Jeez.
Right. But no, I'm excited for his first rivalry too, because he's a really good motivator. Right. Like, if you ever got a chance to watch some of his pregame speeches, he gives really good pregame speeches. And I think he's still learning what this rivalry means to the state too.
Yeah.
Right. And I can respect a guy that comes in and doesn't just input himself into a rivalry like, I hate those guys to the east. Right. Like, you haven't been here. Like, yeah. Let it develop for what the rivalry looks like under your regime. Right. I think that's something that coaches make a fatal flaw in doing. When they show up and they're just like, we've always hated them. They've always hated us. It's like, you don't know that.
And that's one way to.
Unless KF pissed in your cereal at the coaches convention this summer.
Right.
Can you imagine KF just up at like 5 a.m. knocking on Rule's door to wake him up and then running back into his room? There's another way to go about it for coaches in the rivalry sense, right? There's the, I respect these guys a lot. They're a tough program. And that's where the rivalry comes from, is because of such a respect factor. Mm-hmm. And that's how KF approaches it. When you hear him talk about Minnesota, although he's gotten a little bit spicy over the last
couple. He's not a huge PJ fan.
He's not a PJ fan. But
I don't think PJ has any fans across the conference from any other coach.
I mean, when you heard, including his own state's starting to go slightly south on him too.
He's got to be out soon. I have to imagine. Like,
they signed him a lot of money, and they don't have a ton of high expectations there.
That's true. But when you heard historically KF talk about Wisconsin, even talk about Fitz at Northwestern, all these guys, he built up the rivalry and the suspense of that game by saying how much he respects how hard they play, their discipline, all the stuff, building up the opponent and just giving them their flowers. And then that's what creates the, oh man, both these teams, they respect each other so much and they're going to go after it. Good old fashioned, just hard earned battle. And I feel like Rule is that kind of guy. I feel like he would be the one to step into this and be like, man, I just respect the Ferentzes so much. You know, they've clearly established all this stuff, da 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 da. And then, you know, if he can get one on them, then it's like, well, there you go. There, you're starting to build the rivalry a little bit. So
yeah, you build it of, we want to be what they are.
Yeah.
And like what we want to be. And then when you beat them, it's like, well, maybe we're better than what they are. Right, like versus, or then you lose to them, and you're like, "See, that's what we're striving to be." Mm-hmm. Right, you put yourself in a win-win situation for whatever happens, right? And I think that's a big piece of what he's trying to do to keep situations realistic. But also, as a player, I don't know about you, but when I used to hear my head coach talk about how much he respected the other team and how much he liked the way they did things, like there was always a piece of me be like, "Fuck them." Like, yeah, we're going to go out there and dog stomp them. Like, I don't want to hear my head coach praise anybody else. Like, we're going to go out there and embarrass those dudes, show how much respect he has for them. Right. Like, I think like the internal monologue of a player, like that's kind of always what went through my head whenever I'd hear Pauline or anyone out there be like, well, a lot of respect for the team. Like, no.
I totally agree, dude. I feel like when I heard KF say that, I was like, there was a part of me that was like, fuck yeah, KF. That's so modest of you, KF. Thank you for taking that one for the team. But like, honestly, fuck these guys.
Right. You know, like, exactly.
Like, KF, you're the guy who has to stand up there and say that. You're unbelievable that you can stand up there and just give the media that and just tell them we respect them. But over here, these guys suck dick. Mm-hmm. We're going to go crush them. Dude, I'm
the well, let me ask you about your guys's.
Sure.
How do you guys feel right now? I mean, you're 8-2, arguably the worst 8-2, 9-2, arguably the worst 9-2 team in the country.
10-1.
Yeah. Worst 9-2 team in the country. But like, how do you guys feel about this Iowa football team? Like, as a general, like, hopes and dreams moment. Like, are you happy with the season? Are you surprised by the season? Is this kind of what you expected? Like, where's the overall Iowa feeling for this football
team? The win-loss column is probably about where I expected it to be.
Okay.
We talked about it preseason. Like, the schedule is very favorable for us.
As a pod, we picked the team 10-2 before everything happened.
Yeah, we were unanimous 10-2 podcast. But the win-loss record is about what we expected. The offense we expected to be significantly improved from last year, and that obviously did not happen. You know, several key injuries, but I am proud of this team. The fact that they had so much adversity, and you know, early weeks they found ways to win, but it looked worse somehow versus finding ways to win. They're playing. I feel like they're playing a lot harder, more physical these last few games.
Agreed.
And that's what makes me proud as an alum to see is like them just gritting these things out, given all the, adversity they'd had to overcome.
External, I don't know, distraction. Man. Yeah.
As far as hopes and dreams moving forward, I'm putting no expectations out there, man. I'm putting no expectations out there.
From my point of view, I think, like Kevin said, I don't, you know, if we have a better offense, we're like definitely 10-1 right now. We don't lose that Minnesota game. It doesn't come down to that last thing. But we don't beat Penn State, right? We probably don't beat Penn State.
No. Penn State was a much better team than us that day. Yeah, and
that day.
Yeah.
And
they're uber talented.
And if we had a much better offense, then I'd probably be going into this game Friday thinking, yeah, we're probably going to win this one and we'll be 11-1. And if we win by one or two points, like the line says, the early line says on Friday, just like we've beaten every other team by two or three points, we're still going to be 10-2. It's going to be a one game difference, right? But I think, like Kevin said, they have, they battle adversity like champs. And I think
really proud of the way the team, like KF has said it multiple times, like they stay together. All the guys are saying the right things in the media and stuff. So it seems like they're a pretty tight knit group.
And I think Rule might have said this in his comments today. He said something like, they're comfortable in a 7-3 ball game. They don't blink if it's 9-6. Their heart rate doesn't go anywhere in a one-score ball game late in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. And it's something that maybe you don't want that to be a characteristic of your ball club, but damn it, it is for the Iowa Hawkeyes, and it's true. And they know. And this is the whole Nebraska thing. And I saw something about Rule kind of being 0-4 in one score ball games this year. And kind of like, it's the one thing that people are looking at and they're like, God damn it. This is what Nebraska hasn't been able to do is win one score ball games. Iowa does it. And they do it a lot. And they're just so the player. I don't know if it's just inherited when you get into the black and gold, you walk in that building and you're just like, I'm comfortable being down 2 points in the fourth now. Like, it's just something. It's just like, I just feel good when we're not ahead. But it helps them in these ball games. And, but nonetheless, I the hopes and dreams before we hit record, Searles, I said, I think there's a 1 in 30 chance that somehow in Indianapolis, they find themselves in a one score ball game in the third quarter. And they just have to figure out ways to just margin their way out of there and maybe make it a ball game in the fourth. It's probably not going to happen, but I think there is a chance. This defense is really good. Cooper DeJean.
That hurts.
That hurts a lot.
Especially if you pick up Ohio State.
If Cooper DeJean's out against Harrison, big yikes.
Big yikes. So there's not a lot of hopes and dreams. I hope that we get a decent bowl draw and we can win a bowl game gritty like we've won all season, and we can finish the season. You know, hopefully from our side, we win this game Friday. We're 10-2, a loss in the Big Ten Championship, 10-3. Get a win in the bowl game, 11-3 would be, I think a lot of people would be pretty darn happy with that looking back on it.
Any Hawkeye fan who's not is like, 11-win season.
They're a lunatic.
Big Ten West champs. Like, you're an absolute lunatic if you're not happy with that season.
It's what ran Bo Pelini out of Nebraska. Fans became unhappy with good, not great.
I actually, when I was coming home from work thinking about things I wanted to ask you, this is the last year of the Big Ten West. Bo Pelini got 1 year of Big Ten West play.
Mm-hmm.
Where would Nebraska be if they never let him go, do you think?
I think we're very similar to Iowa.
8, 9, 10 wins every year, you think, still?
Yeah, you know, I think if you combine where Bo was and where NIL started, I think if we would have been at an 8, 9, 10 win, like I said, I won 9 or more games all 5 years in college.
Wow.
Right? Like, which was phenomenal. But I even felt it as I left Nebraska, like that wasn't good enough for the fan base anymore, right? Like, we weren't beating Michigan and Ohio State in the same year. We were losing to Penn State and Michigan, right? But we're beating the dog shit out of Illinois and Purdue and Northwestern and those type of things. And then we'd lose to Iowa at the end of the year, right? In a rivalry game. And the fans were like, oh, another 4-loss season. What a waste. And it's like, is it? Like, is it? But like, to answer your question, like, I feel like if Bo would have stuck around, and then if we'd have been a team that was winning 8 or 9 wins a year, and then you introduce NIL, the amount of money that's already funneled into this Husker program, like on a shitty team that's winning 4 games a year, you input an 8-9 win team season into that, we're getting the bigger recruits because we have the bigger pocketbook. Like, Bo Pelini's culture is established. Now, the one thing I will say is I don't think Bo and the transfer portal would have worked well together. Because Bo wasn't a guy that, once you showed up here, it was, hey, freshman, sit back there, eat the shit, earn your time, and when it's time, it's time. Right? And that's just how Bo operated.
And but, that's old school. Not what 18, 19-year-old kids want to do these days.
No, they won't do it. They just won't, right? Like, I think part of the reason why fundamentals and college football play on the field is falling, and I don't know if maybe you guys agree with me on this, but I think the quality of the product has become shittier and shittier over the last 2 years, is because these coaches have to spend more time recruiting their players that are there, keeping them happy, than focusing on football. And I really do think that's a big issue in college football right now.
Yeah,
I agree. Yeah. I agree. I've got a question. Last year of divisions, Iowa is the West champion forever and always, eternally. As we move into the new Big Ten,
mm-hmm.
which is not the Big Ten, it's the Big 18. And who knows, maybe more come along. Where does a program like Nebraska find success year after year, even once Matt Rhule establishes the program? And you could include the Iowa Hawkeyes in probably the same tier. I think I look at them as the same tier in the new Big Ten, because it's a question that we've asked ourselves and sort of our listeners over the course of this year. No one's stupid. We understand that Michigan and Ohio State are the big dogs. Penn State flirts with being a big dog every once in a while. In comes USC and Oregon and Washington. What's the expectation?
Yeah.
What's a good amount of wins in the new Big Ten?
It's a great question. You know, you kind of leveled it. I think there's going to be 3 tiers to the Big Ten, right? You're going to have your, call them elites, right? National elites, which is going to be Ohio State, Michigan, Washington, and Oregon. Like, I think those Washington are going to be
sustains that level of success.
I do, because out of all the Pac-12 teams, they have a lot of talent, and they've always had a lot of talent on defense, right? Like, you look at what Washington's done. They put pass rushers. They put Vita Vea. They put linebackers. Like, they put dudes off defense into the league every single year. So I think they're going to come in and be able to hang in, because they also have such a great talent level on offense. So I put them up there with that. And then I think you're going to look into the tier twos, which is going to be headed by Penn State. Right, I think they're going to bounce between bottom of tier one and always kind of be in that top part of tier two, depending on the year. And then from there, you're going to have Penn State. I think you'll have the Iowas. I think you'll have the Wisconsins, the USCs, the UCLAs, and then I think Nebraska at the moment is going to float between the top bottom of tier two and the top of tier three, which tier three is going to be the Indianas, the Purdues, the Northwesterns, the Maryland, the Rutgers, kind of up and down on that chart. And what it's going to look like is tier ones are going to dominate until they play each other. And then the tier twos are probably looking at a 7 to 8 win season being the best type of season they can have, unless they can find a way to knock off a tier one every year. Right? If you can find a way to go and have Oregon in Iowa City in late November, right? And have USC come to Madison like November 16th, and it's a blizzard.
I think that matters. I think that matters. That
100% matters.
And dude, I can't wait to see it matters. I cannot wait to see it.
But vice versa, you send Iowa or Nebraska or Madison or Penn State out to USC late November, and it's an 85-degree day. That matters,
yeah.
All that stuff matters. And so I think it's going to be interesting how that plays a role. But the biggest thing that's going to be is, like, you have to understand the days of 10 and 11 win seasons, if your name's not Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon, like, they're done, right? Unless you can find a way to get a magical season put together where the stars align and you have a bunch of seniors that have been in the program, get a big transfer in and find a way, like, and then it's going to be like a 1 year, but the level of sustained success of having the double digit win seasons is going to be really, really hard for those tier two teams.
I think you're right. And I think what's going to have to happen from the fan base perspective of a lot of those tier two teams, and even a couple of the tier ones each year, because there's only going to be two teams in that Big Ten championship, is obviously making the Big Ten championship going forward is going to be elite, elite, elite. It's going to be potentially more elite than making the playoff.
Yeah.
In a 12-team system, I mean, yeah, it actually might be harder. Yeah.
I would say that every year moving forward, there's a damn good chance that at least 3 of the 18 Big Ten teams will make the 12-team playoff, and only 2 will make the Big Ten championship. So that's an interesting. I would say
almost 4.
Many years it will be 4.
Yeah, I think many years will be the two teams in the Big Ten championship, and then the next two teams.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's Michigan, Ohio State, Oregon, Washington, and they're all 1 or 2 loss teams.
Well, yeah, I mean, you think about it. There's 4 power conferences now, and if the Big Ten gets 3 of them, that's basically their allotted share.
Sure, yeah. And the Big Ten is one of the best 2 conferences. So you know, as a fan, you're going to have to adjust your expectation. If you make a Big Ten championship, do everything you can to go and watch that game and just savor that year. If you're in Iowa, a Wisconsin, a Nebraska, if they can get into that solid second tier. And then the expectation, or really the hope, is like, we want to put together a season that lands us in that top 12 and gets us in that playoff. And I think that will, maybe not in the beginning, but that hopefully will be good enough for people to see a success.
Yeah, but I mean, so to what we just said, you know, scraping out a 10-2 season, like, you're right on the borderline of, are you in that top 12 right there?
Mm-hmm.
And that can give fans something to hope for.
Do you think? Yeah. I don't. It's going to be tough. It's going to be so hard.
It's going to be so hard, and it's going to be so curious for me to watch the paradigm of power shift of, can Ohio State sustain? Can Michigan sustain? Right? Does one of those Pac-12 teams come in here and just absolutely go to the toilet? Right? Does all of a sudden UCLA show up to the Big Ten and just, they're a 6-6 team now?
Every year.
Right? Like, every year. Right? That's a very realistic slot as well. And I mean, you've seen some teams rise, like Maryland has, like, almost crest, and then they just can't carry it over with the talent level.
It's so tough to actually ascend as a program. Yeah. I don't think people understand that, because other programs.
Go ahead though.
Because other programs are also trying to continue to get better even when they're on top. Like, to elevate yourself from those hypothetical tiers you just laid out, it's so fucking hard.
I predicted that this conference realignment and doing away with divisions is actually going to be good for Indiana, Rutgers, and Maryland, that they don't have to play Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan every year. Mm-hmm.
It's going to be good. It's going to be good for them until they do, right? Like, and because it's going to be a constant reminder for everyone, the fan bases, the university, everyone of like, we're here. And I don't know if we ever get to hear with the way the conference has shifted now, right? You can be having a 6-0 season and feeling really good about yourself. And then Ohio State rolls into town and you get beat 48-20. And you're like, well, there's the bar that we're still never going to get close to. Or, you know, those realistic things, just because with the transfer portal, with NIL, the spending cap, there is no spending cap. So the rich are going to get richer. Like, if you're a group of five school team now, you're toast. Because you're just gonna develop, man.
They are. Yeah.
You're going to develop players for 2-3 years, and then Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Florida, Bama, Georgia is going to go, hey, come over here, 500 grand, come on.
Yeah, exactly.
They're farm schools. They're all farm schools.
That's so tough to realize that. That's so true. Yeah,
they're all farm schools.
We're big JMU Dukes fans here in this podcast. So
yes, we are.
We're trying to get that Iowa JMU connection going, so we can there start farming some of their players.
Hey, we need it.
Well, speaking of farming, Iowa corn is better than Nebraska corn, and
falls.
They play on Friday. What are your thoughts about this Black Friday matchup between the Huskers and the Hawks?
You know, for me, it's going to come down to turnovers. Always an obvious, like, it's such an obvious thing to say, hey, but it's also
you know, you're talking about the Nebraska corn Huskers offense, right?
100%. The Nebraska Cornhuskers offense, we death pay taxes. Nebraska turns the ball over.
Is there any amount of money that I can pay someone to make sure that Jeff Sims starts on Friday?
No. I mean, there's been multiple times where I've like, can we just leave him wherever he got off the bus? Like, but even then, it's like Harburg doesn't know that the forward pass is legal in college football. Like, Chuba Purdy, at times you're like, man, look at this guy go. And then you're like, oh, he checks his first read and runs. Okay, I see how this works now. Cool. Like, we do not have a capable quarterback on this roster. And I hate even saying that, but it's the truth. Matt Rhule knows it. Satterfield knows it. The Iowa Hawkeyes know it. And so every team just loads the box on us and dares us to throw the football. And when we do, bad things happen.
Are you talking about the Huskers or the Hawkeyes?
That's the thing, dude. I watch you guys play football too, and I'm like, well, at least we're not alone in our struggles and miseries. You've got some fat, chubby kid back there playing quarterback that barely can throw the football too. So
the
broadcast. The broadcast was even like 2 minutes left in the half. I don't know if they really want to let this guy throw the ball. They were like, maybe they should just run this thing, get to halftime. And then sure enough, he goes to throw it and gets it knocked out of his hand. And the downstairs were like, see, I told you, he sucks. And I was like, oh, man, misery loves company here over in the Midwest. I don't know. This game's going to be 9-6. This game's going to be 9-6.
It's going under, isn't it?
It started at 27.5. It's down to 26.5.
Dude, I can't imagine. Nebraska hasn't scored more than like 20 points all season. Like, same. You guys finally figured out how to score against Illinois and Minnesota. Not Minnesota.
Not Illinois.
Rutgers.
22 against Rutgers. That was a barn burner. I tell you what.
I mean, I think there may be more punts than points. I'm just going to put that out there.
Wow. Ooh, what a line.
There may be more punts than points.
Oh.
What are you going to put the line at punts at? I'm saying
15.
I was going to say 16. I was going to say 16 punts. 16 punts total.
Wow.
And the game ends more in 7-3 fashion.
Searles, you just gave us a t-shirt. You just stocked our merch. I'm making a shirt immediately. Points. More punts than points.
I mean, is it still a stat that you guys have more punt yards than offensive yards this year? I think I read that a few weeks back.
Yeah. But by like you guys, a wide margin. But you have to understand,
we're averaging 230 yards of offense a game. Like, that's five punts. That's
and with our punter's leg, that's sometimes four punts.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the only reason I like us in this game, and I know you guys can roll your eyes, because it's at home. If this was in Kinnick, I give us no shot. I really do. I give us no shot.
Favorites now.
But with the excitement that Rhule has and with this building up to bowl eligible game, right? I think if this is a 4-win Husker team, or even if this was a 6-win Husker team.
Yeah. Well, like, do you think it's a big difference?
I don't. Yeah, I do. I really think it is. Like, this is
I'm with you.
Everything. This is everything Matt Rhule has preached from the day he got here of like, we are going to be in big moments in big games to accomplish our goals. And what is bigger than Black Friday in Memorial Stadium against your guys' rivals to secure your first bowl game for this class, this senior class ever, right? I mean, that loses some flavor to it if you're already 6-4.
Do you right? think there's an issue, though, that they've just come off three heartbreaking losses in a row?
I think, yeah, I mean, obviously, yes, but I think that some similar to what you guys said about how your guys' blood is cool as a cucumber in one score losses, I think this team is learning differently than it was under Scott Frost, differently of how to handle games in the fourth quarter. Like under Scott Frost, it was total implosions in the fourth quarter, right? Loved like if it. You go, if you go look at the last three games, we've been right there. And it's been more like an inerrant interception or a little bit poor management of time. Like we've been in position to win versus not imploding on ourselves. I know that doesn't sound like, I hope you guys understand what I'm saying. Like it's a different feeling than it was under Scott Frost. And I keep trying to like not let myself fall into the, oh shit, here we go again, 1 point losses. Like I think Rhule is teaching this team, and with a capable quarterback, which I hope to dear baby Jesus, we get one here in the portal next year. But like, I like the way this defense plays. They're going to give us a chance to win in every single game. When you talk about two teams with struggling offenses, I think this could come down to whoever loses the turnover battle, honestly.
I mean, why wouldn't it, man? It's, you might just need to get set up on the opponent's 35-yard line and kick a 52-yard field goal.
Which we have an 18-year-old kicker, so don't love that. And you guys always seem to have a stable of stallies back there.
We've been doing pretty good in the kicking game lately.
So your number one recruits, number one point scorers.
Yeah.
You want to go to the NFL? Come to Iowa. Kick a lot of field goals.
Kick a lot of field goals.
Pun I don't think that the line by Vegas, both over under and spread, could be any more perfect for this game. Personally, if two teams could tie in the modern era, it would be this game.
Right.
And I really, really think it's going to be cold. And I don't know if either team scores more than 10 points. I'm serious.
I completely agree.
I think if Vegas would let their formulas do it, I think this line would legitimately be closer to 20. And that's where I'm at.
And I'm still taking the under.
Same. Searles, you got to go in here in a second. Grant, Kevin, anything left for Jeremiah before we let him go?
G-Bone?
Well, over the summer, I asked you what your goal expectation was. You said 5 wins. Mm-hmm. Now, if you still lose to Iowa, though, is that going to be the same? Or you're like, oh, I actually wanted a little bit more?
No, I think I'm very happy with where the program's at. As much as I know no one loves saying that, I've seen growth this year. I've seen steps in the right direction. I was a firm like this doesn't happen overnight. Now, the thing that sticks with me a little bit is we've left some two games, in my opinion, really the Maryland game and the Minnesota game. We left out there for wins that we're looking at a 7-win season. Yeah. And, you know, for me, that's pouring in points in the right direction. But yeah, I still think 5 wins is a big win for this program. It's the most wins we've had in the last 5 years. Yeah. And we've been competitive. You know, there hasn't been, besides Michigan with the Steelers, like the stealing signs people, you know, that's, we've been competitive in every game. It hasn't been a blowout. We haven't been blown out by a Purdue or an Illinois or like, I mean, unless Iowa comes in and finds a way to score 40 on us, like we haven't been 22.
Well, right. if we beat you by 10, we blew you up.
Right. And that's what I mean. Like the program's in the right direction. So I'm excited for where the program's going to go. And I'm excited to watch this game on Friday. I think it's gonna be a great game to watch.
Yeah.
If you like punts.
And then my last thing is, I know you're from Colorado. Do you want to just talk for like 2 minutes about how back the Broncos are?
Oh my gosh, dude. I watched the Broncos game with my dad last night, and he's dude, a huge
how about
Broncos
those Broncos,
fan.
Man?
He's a Come huge on, Broncos dude. Fan, and obviously I have the Vikes fans, and I was just like, gosh, the alopecia guy couldn't do it? Come on, dude. You don't have any eyebrows? Like, you got to be able to win football games if you don't have any eyebrows.
The alopecia guy? My goodness.
That's the Pastronaut.
He's got other nicknames.
Come the Pastronaut.
Well, I know the fans certainly enjoyed this one. They always do. You're the number one returning guest that people love on the show. We are so thankful you gave us your time.
Always friends.
And though we, you know, we deal with you being a Husker, you're one of the boys. So we appreciate it.
I appreciate you guys. And like I said, I always have a lot of respect for your guys' program. Always have. As I get further away from the Husker world, it's easier to respect and see the respect and the built that you, what you guys have built over there in Iowa. And as always, love being here with the boys. Drake did text me back and he apologized profusely for not being on here. I mean, it's just pouring out of him of how just remorseful he is that he couldn't be here. So I'm sure all of you that know Drake know how true that statement is. But I appreciate you guys having me on as always. Looking forward to getting back in here and doing this. Shameless plug, if you like football NFL talk, go check out the O-Line Committee over on YouTube. Check us out on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. No, not Facebook, TikTok. I don't run it. I think TikTok's a Chinese spy app. But, you know, so anything else, go check out O-Line Committee. Let me know. Drop a follow. And as always, I appreciate you guys.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.